presentation is going to be critical for maintaining our program. So thank you for being here. Jim, thank you for
Great.
Being here.
Thanks, Dad. Great introduction. Appreciate it. How y'all doing today?
Good.
I just want to let you know that I think your town is awesome, even though I'm a diehard New Yorker. When I come up here, I'm sorry, but what a great town, what a great town for music. I've just had an absolute ball at night. I saw Al Di Meola on Wednesday night at Scullers, which is one of my favorite clubs on the planet. And then last night was Victor Wooten and Stanley Clark. Just a mind-blowing experience. So awesome town, and man, I'm jealous. My name is Jim Frankel. I'm the managing director of Soundtree. I am also the ATMI president, which is the technology arm of the College Music Society. And I teach at Teachers College, Columbia University, right down the 95. This topic is hopefully of interest to you. It is my newest passion, if you will. I've been working with Morton Subotnick for the last 3 or 4 years, and I'm doing a keynote presentation at the Australian Music Technology National Conference in 2 weeks, and this is basically the topic of my session. For those of you that are you know, where is the handout? I put all of my handouts already online for you to download. If you go to soundtree.com/MMEA11, you will find the presentation there. I'll show you what it looks like. There is my beautiful MMEA 11 2011 landing page. And if you go down to the bottom, Fostering Creativity, MMEA.pdf. So all the links that I show you are there. The reason I do this is that often my style is I just toss out tons and tons of resources, and everybody says, wait, 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 and they're writing and writing and writing. So just, you have to remember soundtree.com/MMEA11, and all the links that I'm talking about are already posted. So hopefully you'll find that useful. The other thing I'd like to say is that in the back on the floor are these cards. I'm going to be giving away a copy of O Generator Learning to Compose at the end of the session, and I'll be showing you what this software does. If you want to be in it, just fill one of these out. If you've already been to my sessions before, just write your name at the top of the card, and I'll pick one lucky winner at the end. Last but not least, I also have some Soundtree guitar picks, which everyone needs, and some catalogs and literature up here. I hope you'll get those. last but not least, Soundtree, the company that I was one of the first customers of back in 1994 and now have the absolute delight of running, what we do is help music teachers plan, design, implement. We sell all the gear that you need to get technology component of your music curriculum up and running. And so here in Massachusetts, we have over 200 music technology labs in this state alone. We've been around for a long time. Jason Panucci is the account manager for this area. He's fabulous, great resource. And there are people in this room who have Soundtree Labs, so you can talk to them. Please give us a chance at your business, even if it's just buying a microphone or something as simple as I just need a cassette player. Give us a chance to help you out on pricing, because our main thing is helping music teachers with technology. One other fun thing, which I neglected to mention yesterday, if you're a Facebook person like myself, Soundtree has a really pretty cool Facebook page. And if you like us, if you haven't already, we're giving away a free tuner, TM40, at the end of this month. Every month now we're going to be doing giveaways. But why on earth would you join this? I am the person behind the page. So every day I do daily website of the day, product of the day. The newest post was check out my podcast from yesterday's session. So it's really, and there are also tech tips of the day. And it's meant to be a good thing and not just, you know, hammering you for buy stuff. Resources. All right, enough of all that. Let's get on with the show. So as far as the session overview, I need to talk about what non-traditional means, because for some people this is a bristly word. Is there such thing as a non-traditional musician? You're either a musician or you're not, right? So I'm going to talk about what non-traditional, where my concept of that is, and as well as what is creativity, because we always say, "Oh yeah, I'm doing creativity with my students." You know, that's we don't all say that, but I've heard that many times. Oh yeah, I do creativity with my kids. Okay, so what is creativity? Then we're going to look at some specific tools that you may not have seen before. That's my point. I'm not going to be showing notation software or Finale or Sibelius. We've seen it. We know what it does. It's great. But the non-traditional music student often is not served by those notation titles at all. It's, we'll talk about that a little bit. And there may be some things that I put up on the screen that might annoy you, and it's okay. It's all right to have discourse, and it's okay for me to challenge some of what our notions of music education are. And then some resources at the end. Again, I'm here hopefully to give you tools for making every single child in your building a musician, and not just the 20%, which is what I'll get into in a minute. And if at any time you have a question, please feel free to stop me. So when I think of the word non-traditional, I think of these kids. Right, these high school kids in a band. They've got the cool hair, right? But we all have our own definitions of non-traditional. I come from a complete performer family. My mom was a Broadway dancer for years during the golden age of Broadway in the 60s. And my brother is a Blue Man in Blue Man Group. My sister is a Broadway actress. She's in Catch Me If You Can. And neither of them were in the music program at school. When they got to high school, like, this program is so boring. I don't want anything to do with it. My brother's a drummer, child prodigy drummer, had wanted nothing to do with his traditional band program. And my sister, fantastic, successful actress, 25 years on Broadway, never in chorus, right? And I'm not saying that it's our fault. I'm a music educator through and through. It's not our fault that my brother and sister were not served by their high school music program, okay? But I consider my brother and sister the non-traditional student, who was doing this stuff outside of school and not served or not in our programs. How many of you could identify the students in your schools who are the non-traditional? Okay, so what I mean by non-traditional specifically is those students who are not currently served by our traditional music program offerings. Those kids who are not in band, chorus, orchestra. Okay, that's exactly who I'm talking about. And I'm going to be a little bit mercenary here on our own, fighting advocacy. I don't know, as I said this yesterday, maybe it's not as bad up here in Massachusetts as it is down where I live in New Jersey and New York, where just teachers have a target on their face by politicians. But in the music program specifically, if you're only serving 20% of the school's population, and I'll get to this whole 80% notion, if that's all you're serving, when it comes time to your program being on the line, you only have 20% of the school population fighting for you to have your job, right? It's great if 100% is. Now, at the elementary level, we're doing this, okay? At the elementary, most elementary schools, hopefully in Massachusetts, have a rigorous K-6 or K-5 general vocal instrumental program. Is that safe to assume, or are there many towns that don't have any elementary music? Safe to assume that elementary is pretty covered? Yeah, but then as soon as they get to middle school, that's where it hits the fan, right? The kids have to take a general music component, maybe in a marking period, and then they take either band, chorus, or orchestra. And I did middle school my whole career. So I'd go to the elementary at the end of the year and beg kids to join band, right, so that I had a job. Okay? And then by the time they get to high school, the herd gets thinner and thinner. And by the time they get to high school, it's only those kids who are really into it that are going to be in the program. And the vast majority of students in the school population are not involved for one reason or another. It may not fit into their schedules, by the way. That could very well be the case. Or they might be a pianist, right? Or a guitar player, okay? And I always found that when I taught middle school, the number one most talented musician in the school was the pianist who never entered my band program or instrumental music. And I, as a band director, was brilliant, I have to say. I put that kid on the concert and had them play, and the parents would do a standing ovation. I'd get credit for it. Pretty cool. By the way, I'm talking mercenary, your job's on the line at all. That's what I put the kids that's super talented, you have nothing to do with, up on the stage. It's awesome. And if I can say this, one more little quick story on that. I did a School of Rock. I watched that movie. All the kids were like, dude, Frankel, you're just like that guy, man. You're just like him. Can we have a rock band in our school? And I said, yeah, let's do it. So I went to the PTA. I was like, can you give me $2,000 to run a 10-week rock band after-school program? Again, I'm going to be paid for my time. But I said, can you give me $2,000, 10 weeks, and we'll have a battle of the bands. They gave me the $2,000. I taught it. I didn't curse or do anything bad. But at the end of that, we had a battle of the bands, which was sold out, and I sold tickets for it as a fundraiser for the music program, right? Sold out performance. Kids from other districts were there, as long as their parent was there. And we recorded the concert, put it up on iTunes, sold that recording, fundraiser. And the winner got to play on the spring concert. Woo-hoo, right? Right? And they closed out the spring concert. So after I did all my serious grade 3 music, at the end of it, these kids play Girl, You Really Got Me. Standing ovation. Frankel, it's the best concert ever in the history of concerts. So what was your favorite part? The kids at the end, the band. Cool, right? I definitely had one of those major epiphanies where I went, man, why is it that the only standing O's I get as a music educator are for stuff I didn't do? Like for the band, you know, for the rock band. I'm serious. It really hurt that I was doing Frank to Kelly, Shenandoah with a middle school band, like ultimate what I wanted to do with my waving the stick, and I'd get from the parents. Now that was just in my district, okay? But hopefully I'm... So here are the non-traditional kids that I love. This is Danny Fong from Saskatchewan, and I'm going to show you some of these videos. You probably know this girl, have seen this video. If you haven't, you'll cry. If you don't have tissues, maybe you should go get one. Singing Born This Way by Lady Gaga with 24 million views. Here's, of course, Grace and Michael Chance singing Paparazzi, 6 million views. That's on this channel. He has 20 million on the other. This little kid, who I still hate, his name's Ben, from Colorado Springs, can play Through the Fire and Flames, Guitar Hero 3, no mistakes. Right? Here's this kid who I don't think is a kid, but it's one of the top 5 videos on YouTube of all time. 86 million views of this kid playing his arrangement or somebody else's arrangement of Pachelbel's Canon on guitar. Okay, and then these kids who I just adore. And Soundtree donated a lab to their school recently. I went to their school and I watched one of the rehearsals and I was crying in the back just saying how fantastic it was. So let me start by playing you some videos. I'm a mush, by the way. Complete mush.
Is that the same school that does the Eye of the Tiger?
You know what's the sad thing about Greg? And again, now when I'm talking about non-traditional student, this is non-traditional music, right? This guy's actually committing copyright infringement left and right. He's making up his own arrangements. He's posting them on YouTube. And his original site got taken down by the record companies. They totally shut him down. He gets hate mail, believe it or not, from music educators who say that what he is doing is destroying music education.
Wow.
I said, I don't believe you. Can I please see it? And there it is, black and white emails and handwritten letters. You know, you're despicable. And what you're doing is child exploitation, and we hope you rot. That kind of vitriol, which is really, there's no room for in music education. These were the guys at the end of the Oscars that sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow. They lip-synced it. But it was still the best part of the Oscars because the rest of it was awful.
Tears on Mariah, chorus, taken by Lady Gaga.
Another Lady Gaga tune. Greg Breinberg, the director, he does all the arrangements himself. He has zero budget. Zero. So he does all of it himself. He's up there going crazy. And you see the kids moving? That's the other thing he gets hate mail about. No, students should be like this when they sing. They're not allowed to emote with their bodies. It's not about the kid. That's, to me, it's just like, what are you talking about? The reason why I get, if you want to see the best video, it's Viva La Vida of the kids. You'll be in tears watching that one. I don't get it. I just don't get it. Maybe they're just jealous. I have no idea why. Because I think this guy's brilliant, even though he's obliterating copyright. All right. I'm going to show you. Let's go to this girl who I just adore. And I love the fact that that's a Korg keyboard. Sorry. So she made this arrangement herself. So an 11-year-old kid from Vancouver. Okay, what's it with the Canadians, right? They're doing such great stuff up there. And, of course, now she's singing with Lady Gaga in Toronto. I think she already did it. But what a great story. The reason why I show her is this kid is probably not involved or is not showing this in her school. And it's not that we're doing anything wrong. It's just, I think music education needs to expand what we do. Not get rid of band, chorus, and orchestra. I would never suggest it because I'm a tuba player. That's why I'm here. There's something incredible about singing and playing and performing for clapping. But this kid should be in the school ensemble or have a moment on the stage where the rest of the kids can go, oh my goodness, that's amazing. And she learned it by ear, right? And there's a lot of musicians out there that do that. So where am I going with all this? Also known as the other 80%, and my friends Rick Dammers and Dave Williams have a great site on this. We must involve these students in our programs, the kids who are not. And I'm also talking about the kids who have what some consider, you know, they're tone deaf or they have zero musical talent. That is a load of pucky, right? That's impossible. There's no such thing. They are often the most musical children in our school, the kids who are not involved. Paul McCartney got rejected by his high school chorus. How funny, because the teacher said you can't sing. It's pretty rough. This is a website I would strongly recommend checking out, musicalcreativity.org. Musical Creativity, it's profiles of schools doing awesome stuff with non-traditional music makers. Musicalcreativity.org. And you'll see here when I talk about this 80%, because I'm sure some of you are there saying, well, it's actually only 60% at my school. I have 40% involved. And I'm talking mostly about high school. If you take Florida, New York, California, and Ohio, the average is 82% of students are not involved in their music programs in high school. 82%. And in my opinion, that number is so ridiculously high. We need to bring it down and offer more courses for those high school kids. And a little bit more than music appreciation. More like, you know, film scoring, video game scoring, music production. Because guess what? The way to make a living as a musician in this day and age is to be on the production side. You know, the Olympian few will get to actually make money and a living playing their instrument, like Victor Wooten, right? Those are very few and far between, those people. The people who make a lot of money are video game scorers, right? And film scorers. And there are high school kids doing that, by the way. All right. Ooh, that was a nice little shock. Very cool. For a variety of reasons, these students do not connect with our traditional programs offering. It's time to expand them. And again, I'm not placing blame on anyone. It's just that music education loves the way we were taught, so we kind of model it and do it again. So what is creativity? Because any questions on the non-traditional music student? All right, good. So what is musical creativity? I just want to make that very, very clear, that every single person on the planet is creative, right? When we all come out of the womb, we're pretty much equipped with this. I mean, there's genetic stuff, but we're pretty much all very, very, very creative. And my work with Morton Subotnick is all about this. He believes, through the research that he's looked at, that everyone's born with perfect pitch, every single person. There's a lot of research that he's looked into. There's a great book called The Singing Neanderthals. I strongly recommend it. It blew my brain when I read it. The Singing Neanderthals. Okay? And what it basically means, when a child is born, they have to have such a heightened sense of pitch, because you can take an infant, a 3-day, 10-day-old infant, and have five mothers similar height, look, everything, and have them all coo to the child, and the child can identify their mother every single time. Never miss their mother. I'm just going, hi, hi. They'll always pick their mother's voice or their father's voice. And that's because mothers speak motherese, and that children are so in tune. And then what happens is, as soon as we learn language, this is what all the research I've done with Mort is, as soon as we learn language, we abandon the pitch because we can then shift to language, right? And we don't need that heightened sense of pitch. I'm not speaking out of wackiness. This is what the research I've been looking at says. And then all children are born musical. They all sing. They all naturally are intoning when they're little. They'll la la la, all children. And then as soon as they hit music programs, we just hammer that out of them. I'm not saying we collectively, like you are doing that. But when children hit music class, how many, my wife is a perfect example. I use my own stories. My wife had a music teacher who told her that she was wrong. Right? That should never be an answer in music, in my opinion. And here's the situation. This teacher had a piece of music playing and said to the children, what do you imagine when you hear this music? And my wife said, I imagine a train. And the teacher's like, what are you talking about? That's absolutely incorrect. There's no train. And that one little moment of my wife's life ended her music career when a music teacher said, you're wrong. Right? And you think about that. If you as a music teacher say, you know, what do you, I'd like you all to sing something when you feel, you know, how does this make you feel, and sing it. The worst thing you can do, if, all right, let's just make it here and now. If I asked one of you to stand up and sing right now, how many of you would be really willing to get up and do that in front of everybody? Right? That's the answer that the kid, imagine being a child, right? Now, children have way less intimidation than we do. Kids will do it. But the worst thing you can do to a child when they do it is have anybody in that classroom say they're wrong, laugh. You know, you have to create a nurturing environment where everything is okay. And then if a kid gets up and goes, I think spring sounds like this. Yeah! Okay, really, that's really interesting. Why do you think that sounds like spring? That's so cool. Right? Rather than saying, you know, go to the detention. You're out of here. Every single child in your class is creative. Every single one. And what's happened is it's been beaten out of them by traditional education. Not you, but education in general. Because the that think different thing, when somebody who says some wild, wacky answer, they're crazy. It's the crazy people who are the artists, right? Many traditional music programs reserve creative opportunities for the Olympian musician. What that means is that it's only you. How many of you, you know, back in the day, I wrote a lot of music. The way I met my wife, she's a modern dancer, and I wrote music for her to dance to. And I was once introduced as a composer, and I immediately went, no, I'm not really a composer. I just kind of am a hack. I'm not a composer. And you know why I said that? It's because I felt that to be a composer, this is your life. This is all you do. And I, as an adult, was like, I'm not really a composer. I'm a hack. And it was because of the way I was raised in my music program. If a child wants to say they're a composer because they went la, 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 what's wrong with letting them? And what we do, I feel, is that the composition opportunities in schools are often left for only those kids who have a total mastery of music theory. And they know all the rules, so therefore you're now allowed to call yourself a composer. And I always look at it, when you see Jackson Pollock paintings, you know, you say, well, Jackson Pollock, anybody could do that. You just splatter paint on a canvas. He's not really an artist. He's just a paint splatterer. But Jackson Pollock knew all the basics. He knew everything. He could do portraits. He could do whatever he wanted. But so he had that firm fundamental and then just splattered paint. And I think in the music world, we say, well, in order to be a composer, you absolutely have to have all those firm fundamentals to do it. I think it's short-sighted. Yeah?
On the Jackson Pollock thing, are humanities students that way, that anyone could do that, so we have to try it. And
right.
I realized that, no, not anyone can do
right.
That.
Right. Yeah, I've been to the MoMA and seen the Met and seen the big one, the one that's beige with black and white on it. It's brilliant. I'm sorry, I don't know the name of it. I just know I like it. And my daughter, same thing. Well, this is so, and you also go there, and there's a canvas the size of that wall that's white. And that's the whole canvas. All right, so I'm going to say something that might be controversial, but notation can be a barrier to creativity, right? this Paul McCartney can probably read a little bit of music, but probably one of the greatest songwriters in the history of the planet doesn't read music. There's something to be said for that, right? Why? Hans Zimmer, one of the greatest film scorers, does not read music. Right? He doesn't do anything in notation software. He does it all in sequencing software with loops, and that's how he constructs music. There's something to be said for that. Okay? Many professional musicians don't read music. All right, so my favorite analogy for composition is this one. Composing music is like finger painting. Right? I do this kind of continuum with my teacher's college students all the time. And let's do it here, just for giggles. On this side, when I'm here, this extreme means that a child can compose even if they know nothing about music. And on this, when I get to this speaker, the child must have mastery of all the basic fundamental music. They need to know how to notate right. They need to know what a 1, 4, 5, they need to know scales. They have to be a master to compose. So I'm going to start over here. Raise your hand where you fall personally on that continuum. Raise your hand where you feel. Yeah.
When we're talking about composing, are we counting like improvisation?
Everything. Excellent question.
Are we talking our personal?
This is your personal philosophy about your students teaching, your students as composers. Your students as composers.
Are you worried about the quality of their composition?
No. That makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
Oh.
Right.
Yeah, of course it does.
So we're raising our hands.
Raise your hand where you fall in the continuum. Child can compose. This side is no skills. That side is lots of skills. And I'll start out over here, just in case there are extremists. All right, go. There's a couple. Oh, and some of you raise your hand the whole way, which I like. That's good. I've never had that before. That's very good. I teach at Teachers College. Most of my graduate students are Juilliard and Manhattan School graduates, almost all of them, right? That have just come and said, all right, now I want to go teach at a college. I'm going to get my master's or doctorate. They all go over there, all of them. So I'm like walking going, are you kidding? Are you kidding? Are you? And then the hands go up. Right. So imagine, how many of you have children? Okay. As a parent, that changes everything, by the way. When you have children, anything they do is brilliant. Right? I don't have to go into all the things, but it's just like, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. Right? Imagine that a child, you give a child a big blank piece of paper and their first finger painting experience, right? And non-toxic. And you say to the kid, go, paint. Do some art, right? So the kid just gets all that paint all over their hands. Have you experienced this? What happens if you let them have at it? It becomes a big sheet of brown. Every time. Only very rarely will they make a picture. It's usually, ooh, it feels so cool. Ooh, I love what the colors are doing with you. Ooh, right? What parent on the planet would pick their kid's hands up and say, you are not allowed to paint until you know the rules? You don't know the color wheel. You don't know perspective. I am sorry. Get your hands off that canvas. Are you with me? It's okay to make a mess. It's okay for that to be brown. By the way, Morton Subotnick and I have a huge debate about this next topic, which is when that brown canvas is complete and the child goes, I'm done, and they're covered in paint, The parent always does the same thing, and he says it's a horrible mistake. They take it and they put it on the refrigerator and show the child, look at what you made. There's art, right? And he believes that's the worst thing you can possibly do, because now the child goes, oh, my job is to make paintings so mommy will like them and put them on the refrigerator, rather than an intrinsic emoting through a medium. I'm a parent, I'm sorry, I'm hanging this stuff up on the refrigerator. But I said this yesterday in elementary school. Yes. In the elementary, we never send home musical things for them to hang on the refrigerator at home.
I do.
Excellent.
In my classes, I have the website, and when kids, we compose, because I'm way over there, I'm the guy out in the hallway,
right.
Everything. And when we record anything, I post it on the website, and every kid knows that's the musical refrigerator, and I actually teach them. In art class, you can bring it home. In math class, you can bring it home. When we do sound, it's gone once it's done.
Right.
We go through the whole process of recording, and then we put it on the website so they can bring it home to their electronic refrigerator and share with anyone in their family.
Excellent. I that's fantastic.
You've got to get it out there.
Fantastic.
I just wanted to add a little anecdote to the whole painting thing. I was working with a student who had some attention disorders, and we were working, I think it was sonar at the time, and I looked over, I think we were supposed to be working on a percussion project, and he was in the piano role, just kind of like drawing pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so frustrated because he couldn't come up with ideas. I said, why don't you just draw a series of pictures in
right.
the piano role? Then we quantized it,
right.
and then we just found some nice patches to work with it. And he was actually really amazed at his musical.
Yeah, I showed that software very similar to that yesterday with that same kind of Morton Subotnick. That's why his making music is that, finger painting.
And you can do that in any sequence.
Any sequence.
Piano roll.
Yep.
You just start drawing.
Excellent, excellent point.
What does a sailboat look like?
Yep.
Kind of what does it sound like
right.
musically?
And what will their name sound like?
Right,
which is
exactly.
number one.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm going to move ahead here. You need to give your students time to experiment with music. You have to. Include it in your curriculum. And I'm talking K-12. Give students time. And is the right place the band room? No. As a band director, never, ever, ever would I have given, I'm sorry if other people will argue with me, I would never have given up band rehearsal time to say, let's all compose. Because I had a concert looming on the horizon that I had to have perfect. So I'm talking about, and if that offends people, I'm sorry, but I would never have done it in my own band class. I did it in my general music classes. Or I'd create a I had a composer's club that was before school, and a school of rock after school for those kids who wanted to do. And by the way, my composer's club, none of them were in my band. None of them. I didn't even know they could compose. And then they joined. But you have to give students time. You can't do creativity in a 45-minute class period. Right? You can't say to the students, all right, compose a melody with 8 notes, and now we've done our creativity component of the curriculum. Check. Right? It does take time, and it does get messy. And I think what a lot of teachers have a problem with in the whole creative process is that you go from being the teacher. I know the sage on the stage, guide on the side, but it is really true when you're doing creativity in your classroom. You have to become a learning facilitator, meaning that it's okay if the students know more than you. It's okay to say to a child, that's really interesting, where are you going to go with it? And you don't have to teach. You know, you get down on your knees with the kids, and you're like, all right, well, let's try this, and help them and guide them rather than saying, you know, how many of you, my daughter is in 5th grade, and she had a poetry unit recently. And it was like, this is how you write poetry. And to me, that's just like, you know, okay, it's good to know what the iambic pentameter is and what a haiku is and what is that. But then to get it wrong, to get a poem marked wrong, is just like, and that is where I'm coming from with composition. It's never wrong. It's wow, that's interesting, is my favorite expression. And if you want to see a great example of it, go to vtmidi.org. vtmidi.org. Vermont MIDI Project with Sandy McLeod. They have a great, and when the student posts the first draft, it's not the final. They go through draft, edit, revise, draft, edit, revise.
I just have a question. I do a lot of composing with my kids, mm-hmm. and I do traditional notation, and I do stuff like
right.
Their programs as well. Like, do you feel that music literacy shouldn't be taught anymore? Like,
excellent question.
I'm like, I don't know where you.
No, you know what? You. I'm jumping ahead, but I'll
okay.
say it. What I believe is that when children are engaged and feeling good about creating, they're going to want to know. You're creating the need to know,
mm-hmm.
because, for example, with Mixcraft, and I'll use that as a perfect example. After a while, all their compositions will sound the same if they're
yeah.
just using loops. And
right.
it gets boring, and it's a dangerous spot,
yeah.
right? So that's when the kid says, how do I make my piece sound better? Or that's where the teacher starts scaffolding the instruction and saying, all right, in this piece, you can use 4 loops. The next piece, though, you have to use 3 loops, but one part has to be your own playing. The next time, you're allowed to use a drum and a bass track, but everything else is yours. You know, and the scaffolding of getting it down to, all right, you can use drum loops because everyone else does, and then write all the music yourself. Give them strictures along the way. But I want to make it very clear that music literacy is extremely important. what I'm trying to do is throw a huge net on that other 80% and say, hey, check out what we're doing with creativity in our classrooms.
Yeah, because like my seventh graders will kill anybody to use Mixcraft.
Right.
They absolutely love it. You know, so I try and do some of the notation stuff first to get it out of, kind of like out of the way a little bit.
Right.
And get some of the skills done before jumping to the more fun stuff. Yeah, and I do form with Mixcraft and give it structure because
Excellent.
You're right, the loops just go on forever and they don't know how to control it or organize
right.
it.
Right.
Yeah, I find
well, you know, my thing about notation is, and I taught notation all the time as a middle school. You know, that's how I did it. I had Sibelius and GarageBand, and I'd go back and forth between them. And the kids who were notation-based, they went in Sibelius, and the kids who couldn't read music went in GarageBand, and that's how I worked it. And that's another thing. Teachers have to be flexible to say, all right, well, which one's going to work for my kid? My thought on that about the notation thing is this: Robin Hodson, probably know him from his Sibelius days, but he says this all the time, and it does get a little bristly with some people, is that if you go into any music production studio in America, you'll never see a note of music. It's all Pro Tools, Logic, you know, it's all up on that's how they're writing the music that we listen to on the radio. And then it's only when they want to make money and put it in Cherry Lane Publishing and put out Lady Gaga tunes that somebody actually goes in there and writes it down. And if you ever notice when you play those light, and I'm sorry, I have a 10-year-old, so I have to buy that music, but when you're playing Lady Gaga tunes, it's like, wow, this sounds so cheesy. That's not what's on the record, right? Does that ever happen to anybody? You're like, and when you do band arrangements of tunes, kids like, this isn't the music, right? Anyway, so I hope I addressed that question. It's a very good one. I'm not saying abandon music literary skills, ever.
Yeah, but it's a hard thing to balance.
It's very hard.
You know, because I love the creativity part of it, but, you know, I feel like they need to learn.
No question about it, they do.
You know, how to read what they're doing.
It is a balance, and it's up to your personal meter of comfort or your level of comfort on how much notation you're going to do. Because I've seen music teachers who do incredible things with composition. Vermont MIDI does not accept sequences. Nothing. It's all notation-based. Right? And they're, in my opinion, the greatest single example of technology in music education. And it's all notation. And I have that fight with Sandy McLeod all the time. Why don't you put sequencing? What? And just that's their philosophy, and they do great things. So I'm not saying it can't be done.
Sure.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, that's very important here. Okay? You can't really teach creativity, right? You can only foster it and give your students opportunities to be creative. That's, again, this is my, I'm very opinionated on this kind of stuff, but that's what I think. Yeah?
The question I have is how does one deal with, I teach a lot of creative stuff, and I try to do it that way. Some of my other faculty members from other, you know, places are going, well, how do you assess creativity? And when you're getting in the classroom and you have somebody watching
right.
your class, and you have one kid that's doing something incredible at that level, and the other who's had a lot of background, another one who's just sort of starting, my grades are all kind of the same.
Right.
If they're working, you know, if that one kid that doesn't know anything,
right.
really intense
right.
about it, and then, of course, the administration goes, well, you know, all your grades look the same. I mean, what are you doing there?
Well, you and I are kindred spirit, because I had the same type of situation where my... Now, this is probably not what your classroom is like. My classroom was a zoo.
Well, mine's a...
Right. Well, that's good. I think that's the best classroom in the school, in my opinion. But I was the odd man out. I was the nut that the administrator just kind of tolerated. Because my kids would come in, and I'd have the worst kids in the school doing the coolest stuff in my classroom. And I got every single kid had an A. And the administrator, same situation. And the administrator's like, how can you give these kids all an A? I was like, how do you quantify creativity? What I did is I made a rubric. Did they do this? Did they do this? Did they do this? Yes, there's your stupid, sorry. So I make it, did they follow the instructions? Right? Were they kind to other people when listening to their music? No, this is how I quantified their results in my class. Was their piece well thought out? Did they work hard on it, you know? And then I go, yeah, excellent, 5, 5, 5, 5. And the kid who was a jerk, yeah, you got a 2 on not being nice because you laughed at somebody's composition. And that's just, and this is interesting, and maybe it's not so nice, but once I got tenure, I wasn't afraid to do that kind of thing in my classroom. It's really sad, but my classroom wasn't a zoo until about 2 or 3 years after I got tenure, where the teachers probably all thought I was nuts and wasn't doing anything. The kids were going to my class to have fun. You know, God forbid that they have fun in my class. But my answer to you is make up a rubric with some, you know, so to make those administrators happy. And if they're not happy, it's just like, well, the principals knew, because in my school, the principals would rotate like a rotating door. They'd just come in for 2 years, get fired, a new one would come in. And they'd always like, oh yeah, that's Frankel, just leave him alone. He's in his classroom. But yeah, excellent point though. Quantifying or you know, making an assessment is sometimes tricky. Technology can help you provide music making experiences for every child. And there's so much free, really great stuff online that they can do at home. If you're a notation person, noteflight.com, right? If you're a sequencing person, aviary.com. Free sequencer, it's GarageBand. Jamstudio.com, right? Tons and tons of great free resources online for kids to play with. So they don't need, they can do it at home. So any questions before I go into some specific tools? All right, I haven't offended anyone too badly. I've only lost about 2 people so far. That's all right. All right, so I'm going to show you a couple of these things, and I really think they're pretty hip. I can't show you everything because I don't have time. But my latest favorite piece of software, period, is Ableton Live. And it's one of these, what does it do? Why would I want that? I already have Pro Tools. I got GarageBand. I have Reason. Why would I get Live? So I'm going to show you a little bit. Ableton Live Intro is $99, and it's incredible. If you want to do any kind of remixing with your kids, like have them remix tunes, you get Ableton Live. If you want to have any kind of live performance, an electronic ensemble live, you have to get Ableton Live. Right? It's the only software that does what it does. I'll show it to you for about 3 minutes. Right? A site license, by the way, unlimited copies for schools, $1,200. Unlimited copies. That's pretty cool. I'm going to be giving this one away. I know I've said this 100 times, but if you didn't fill out a card, they're in the back of the room on the floor. Learning to Compose by O-Generator, I'll show you that one. Then there's the Chord K-Oscillators and the K-Oscillator and the K-Oscillator Pro. I didn't bring one with me because I gave it away, because I'm that kind of silly person. But this only requires a finger to make music. It would be much better if I had it to play for you. But you left to right is a scale, and you can assign the scale. So you can just play music by purely moving your finger across. It's awesome with students with special needs. And this is the K-Oscillator Pro, which basically records everything so that you can have it. The problem with this is it's really a performance device. And then once you turn it off, everything you made is gone. The K-Oscillator Pro, I think we sell them for $109 on our site, something like that. And this one's $399, but it's really pretty cool. Secret Composer is a brand new piece of software you've probably never heard of. And so for those of you who are notation people, this is fantastic. It's a $39 encyclopedia, step-by-step how to compose. So I'll show you that briefly. Groovy Music, you've probably seen 100 times. Awesome. GarageBand for little kids. Right? Great, great software. And the Monotron, I'm not going to show you, but it is really geeky. So let me very quickly, and that's okay. Geeky's fine. So let's show you Ableton Live very quickly. 3 minutes to show you a great piece of software. I have not loaded all the content because my hard drive is full, so I just have the software to show you, and I got a couple of little audio clips to bring in. But we have a curriculum coming out very soon on this Ableton Live, mostly middle school, high school kind of stuff. How many people have Ableton Live? I mean, the people that have it, isn't it? Don't you just love it?
It's too hard.
Too hard.
It's too hard.
Too hard.
You can't do dance music without it.
That's a fact.
It's a high learning curve, but the loops and sounds are great. And the whole sets.
The sets are amazing.
The sets are terrific.
And do you like it?
I thought it was the easiest out of all the programs.
So here's what you do. For those of you that think it's hard, this, by the way, this is how I learn everything, literally everything. I go on YouTube and I say Ableton Live Intro. There it is. And they have incredible, incredible tutorials. I'm teaching this at Teachers College right now. And I was every right before class, and now I'm being podcast, so my students will be able to hear this. Basically, the Sunday before class, I go through all the tutorials. I'm like, okay, how do you do this? How do you do this? And then on Monday, I teach it. Right? And by the way, that's fine. You need to stay two steps ahead of the kids. Really. And then you'll be okay. And if you don't know an answer, right, this is the perfect thing. When a kid goes, how do you do this? And today, Ableton Live, Dr. Frankel? I don't know. Go on YouTube. Oh, we block it at our school. All right, I'll tell you tomorrow. Or tell the kid to go on the terminal side of their computer and go log into YouTube on their computer at home. Which is bad. So this is what Ableton Live looks like. Very different, right? There are slots and all that. Well, but let me just show you. So here's a great piece of music. My Snow Patrol. I drag it in, and now I've got it here. Hooray. I got to make this a little smaller so I can see everything. And then I say, you know what? I want to do a remix. I want to do like a hip-hop version of Snow Patrol. Right? So I can go in and find, again, pretend I have dozens and dozens or hundreds of loops. It comes with hundreds and hundreds, thousands of loops. I just, I didn't load them because I have no space. So I bring in my drum loop, which is very different. Uh-huh. And when I play both together, it automatically syncs them together, magically. And then all I have to do is tell my drum loop, hey, I want you to loop, buddy. And you're going to go from beats 1, 2, 2. Right? And then... I dropped the beat, but that's... This is... You can't do that with any other software. Well, you can with Pro Tools and Logic and do time stretching.
Yeah.
Right? But what I love about this is it's idiot-proof. You just put the clips in and it does it for you. If you do that in Pro Tools, you'll be sitting there playing with little, you know, markers and moving stuff around. This is the easiest way to do remixing with kids. And what's incredible about it is that, and there's a thing called MIDI mapping, and this might get really nerdy for a second, but it's okay. If you want to, I can say, you know what, I would like this clip, I'm going to click on MIDI. I would like this clip to be played when I click on this. So this is the Korg NanoPad. I plug this into Ableton Live, and I say I would like this clip to start when I press this pad. And then I would like this clip to start when I press this pad. And so you can put all these different, I forget what they call them, hold on, clips into different pads, MIDI triggers. So the kit, that's when you see like DJ people up on, and there's always a laptop, it's guaranteed they're running Ableton Live and they're playing all their clips here. Because what's really cool is if you start the loop without the other one, if you say, I'd like to add a loop now, it automatically goes, wait, no, not now, and now. It waits until the right time to do it. Ableton Live, $99, middle school and higher.
Yeah. There's also the awesome $149 Launchpad.
Oh, my God.
Totally native with Ableton
right.
Live.
The Launchpad is made for Ableton Live, and it looks like a Connect 4, it's like a checkerboard. It's got all these buttons. Really cool. All right, I have not a lot of time, so I'm going to show you this piece called O Generator Learn to Compose. This is the one I'm going to give away, $69. So Ableton Live's $99, O Generator Learn to Compose is $69, and I showed this yesterday in my... in my elementary session, but I'm going to show it again because it's pretty cool. And this, I won't do funk today. I'll do something different. Yesterday I was feeling funky because it was 8 a.m. All right, so I'm going to create my own tune, and I'm going to do dance because I'm feeling like I should dance. I'm going to do a deep bass. And I'm just choosing instruments here. For those of you that remember Rock, Rap, and Roll, which I loved. I'm so sorry that went away. This is kind of like rock, rap, and roll a little bit, and I'm going to do dance keyboard. So this might, as I said yesterday, might hurt your brains, but this is one measure of music. And talk about non-traditional, this is one measure of music. Oh my God, there's no staff! Right? It's okay. Right? Beat one, beat two, beat three, beat four, every circle is a 16th note. And you can put loops or samples in each one. So I'm going to press play and I'm going to start. By the way, this has a whole curriculum that comes with it, videos on how to do it, and step-by-step instructions.
Give us a downbeat. There we go.
Mm-hmm. By the way, in a smart board, smart classroom, you just click on the left side as many times as you want. It scrolls through the loops.
Okay.
I'm not feeling that.
It's because you need a hi-hat in there.
Ooh. Ugh. Sorry, folks. I'm not really a good dance person. My mom owns a dance studio, but none of the genes.
It's interesting.
Right.
Very interesting.
Ooh. Ooh. Can't find anything. So now I can go to a rave or something like that.
So once you're done with measure one, you got to move on to the next measure.
Excellent. Very good. So along the bottom are all these blank, or all these white circles. Each one of them's a measure. So then you say, I want to go to measure two now and make measure two.
And I assume you can copy the entire pattern.
Yeah. So watch. Excellent question. You go into measure two. You leave measure alone, one goodbye, and so now it's blank. And you could say, I'd like to paste in my drum kit part. Oh, wait, sorry. I want to copy my drum and my percussion.
Yeah.
Right? Then you go to measure two and say, all right, paste in my drum, paste in my percussion. Now I'm going to add new bass line.
Yeah.
That's going to be awesome. So now when I press and press play, and now it's going to keep going back and forth between measure one and two. This, by the way, is good at elementary enough, as far as I'm concerned, because the kids would come up on a smart board and click in their stuff. What's the coolest part of all is you can, at the end, say record tune and export this into GarageBand or Mixcraft. So getting back to your point earlier, this is where music literacy comes in. They make the stuff here, and then you say, all right, now you can have one GarageBand, one Mixcraft loop, one O generator loop, and one played in. What I love about this is I don't have to know how to read music. All I'm doing is pressing play, and it's clicking through, and I'm adding stuff, and I'm like, yeah, that sounds hip, or no, that sounds terrible, and I can make my decisions without being worried about, you know, how do you put a G, you know, dotted half note? I don't know. I love O generator for that.
So can you get melody in the dance keyboard?
Yeah, right. Or what you do is you take that loop into GarageBand and add a melody to it. Pretty cool, I think. I love it. $69. Great stuff. And now I'm going to show you Secret Composer, which is a software title that we brought to the market. This guy's name is Gary Gutman. He's a Hollywood film composer. And you know, how many of you in your undergraduate work had a course on how to teach kids how to compose? One person, right? The only reason that I did it was that I was a double major, right? That's the only reason I felt comfortable teaching composition. It's because I had a role model who showed me how to do it, and not how to, but I saw how he sequenced the information for me. So here's Secret Composer, $39, and you go into composition. This is really simple software, but the content is worth the price, for sure. You can say, I'd like Composition 101 lesson, lesson one. Here are some chords, and I'm not going to read this to you because I have 4 minutes. There's an objective, so it's total curriculum. And I can say, all right, I understand that. Let's go to the next lesson. Here's a melody. Let me see what it looks like. Oh, that's pretty cool. And it goes, all right, well, that's the beginning of a melody. Now let's, I'm zipping through this. Again, $39.95. All right, we need to extend the melody. And, right, oh, well, that's pretty boring. It's just the same thing. So he says, well, try a melodic sequence where you raise everything up a whole step. Right? This should make all the notation people very happy because it's totally notation based. I wanted to include it just to show you that this is a total curriculum for composition. And you really only need one copy for yourself. I'm zipping through the lessons, as you see. And then what's pretty cool is, after a while, it says, right, you're doing film composing. But let's say the film is really scary. How do you tell the kids, here's how to write scary music? Usually they just play around on the keyboard and they go bang to try to make it scary. Well, this actually shows you how to make fear.
Analyzing fear.
Right? And it shows you how to make music that sounds like fear. Okay? Love this. Here's how, you know, use this in your violin part. Let's go back to the beginning. Right? Add major 7. Right? Here's how to make your harp sound scary. I love this, by the way. And it's step by step, really sequential. Very, very cool. Again, that's Secret Composer. You know, stack major minor 7ths. Ooh, spooky. All right? Love it. All right. Last but not least, I want to share with you a hardware device that I just think is really awesome, and it's made right here in the Boston area. And it's called the Jam Hub. The one problem I had with my rock band club was that it was loud after school, right? And I had 4 rock bands rehearsing simultaneously, right? Can you do that? No, you can't put 4 rock bands. You go in that corner, turn your amp down. No way. So I had to have them in 4 separate classrooms, which was, for me, a nightmare to monitor because they were in other people's classrooms than mine. Because we had the chorus room, the band room, and that was it. This is a silent rehearsal studio. So all the kids plug into this Jam Hub, and they all get a mix, and the best part of all is if you have a really annoying guitar player who's always playing really loud, you can turn them down in your personal mix. Right? And the drums are, you can use either acoustic or electric drums. Electrics are way better. They're very inexpensive. Right? It's called the Jam Hub. It's $299 for the light model and $699 for the All Bells and Whistles tour. Here's what it looks like in action. Awesome. They can't hear. All they're hearing is their own music, and you're just listening to that. Put the headphone on. Isn't that cool? I'd have to put plugs in myself. I'd have my iPod playing some Rachmaninoff. Oh my God. All right, I know I'm out of time, but I just want to. Jam Hub is a Massachusetts-based company, and we're working really closely with them now because I think this is the coolest way to get non-traditional music students involved in your music program. They can have these little silent rehearsal rooms going. So I just want to close out, finish off. I know I'm pretty much right out of time. I didn't even get to these, right? These are the ultimate gateway to non-traditional music making. Check out the GarageBand iPad app. Totally awesome. The best app, in my opinion, of all is GarageBand. I don't have time. So just very quickly, and then I'll do the drawing. If you didn't get a card, please fill it in, or please hand it in a minute. We're doing a summer music tech workshop this summer at MENC headquarters, July 18th. I'll be teaching along with Robin Hodson and Richard McCready, Amy Burns, and Joe Pisano. All right, here's all the stuff. We go to soundtrue.com/MMEA11 to get these links. Can I have the cards? Any questions while I'm collecting cards?
Oh, you sign a card.
I'm going to be giving
a card.
If you need a card, just write your name on it for now, so we don't have to wait.
Anyone else need a card?
I hope you all win, but I only have one.
The odds are good.
Yeah, they are. I know. Went south. Anyone else?
Jim touched on a really interesting topic, which was film scoring and video games. Sean Hagen, the music technology director for MMEA, is doing a session on that tomorrow. His last session yesterday was standing room only. I suggest that you come to